From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon. Broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, March 15th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gnoth chish, hawa, toyaksak nusum, soama, for joining the conversation. On today's show, the Nordic Film Festival continues at the Goldtown Theater with Hilma. We'll find out more from organizers, the Sons of Norway. The Northwoods Writer Symposium for aspiring and seasoned writers is happening this May in Skagway. We'll have a preview. A boating skills and seamanship course is starting up this Monday, offered by the Coast Guard Auxiliary called the Juno Flotilla. We'll get all the details. Those conversations, plus Sounds Wild and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakhaya ha ani kakh, gynil chish.
Two animal stories of interest in our news highlight today. Humpback whales are often considered a conservation success story. The species was near extinction just 50 years ago. Today, tens of thousands of humpbacks call the North Pacific home. But climate change may be stunting the species' recovery. As KTOO's Anna Canny reports, a new study using artificial intelligence shows that Alaska's humpback population has dropped more than 30% in a decade.
Wildlife biologist Janet Nielsen has been keeping a close eye on Alaska humpbacks for nearly three decades. For the National Park Service, she keeps a count of the whales that migrate up from Hawaii to feed in Glacier Bay and Icy Strait each year. During the summers between 2014 and 2018, she noticed something was off.
Calves went missing. We had whales in the prime years of their life go missing. And we certainly had some older whales go missing as well, but it really seemed like it hit all the whales.
Nielsen is a co-author on a new study, which finds that almost 7,000 North Pacific humpbacks went missing between 2012 and 2021. Naturalist Ted Cheeseman is also a co-author on the study. He's the founder of Happy Whale, a photo database that uses artificial intelligence to quickly identify individual whales by the unique black and white patterns that mark the underside of their tail fins, or flukes. With Happy Whale, Cheeseman originally set out to do a simple population count.
When we first saw those numbers, it turned a population study into a climate study.
That's because the database showed a sharp decline in humpbacks that coincided with the blob, which spiked ocean temperatures from Alaska to California between 2014 and 2016, killing fish, seabirds, and more than 30% of Alaska's humpbacks. Climate change may complicate the species' conservation success story. Back in the 1990s, Cheeseman was working as a tour guide in Antarctica, and he says humpbacks were hard to come by back then.
We didn't see many whales at all. We did, however, visit some of the largest whaling stations that were ever built. You know, they're factories, absolutely factories to turn living whales into product.
Commercial whaling pushed them to the brink of extinction, but since it ended, their populations in the North Pacific have boomed. Humpbacks were even taken off the endangered species list in 2016. But around that same time, researcher Heidi Pearson was seeing the whales around Juneau get skinnier and skinnier. Pearson, who researches humpbacks at the University of Alaska Southeast, says these whales are usually more adaptable than other marine species. They can travel long distances to find food, and their diet is flexible.
And so the fact that they still declined due to what we think is lack of prey, even though they are so flexible, means that it must have been really bad.
Pearson says she still believes in the resilience of humpbacks, but the species is clearly feeling the pressure of warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
I really learned a lot about the fragility, actually, of the ocean system to this warming. I mean, animals and systems are resilient, but clearly during the heat wave, they reach this tipping point.
For Nielsen in Glacier Bay, the decline emphasizes the need to protect humpbacks, even when their populations seem healthy. Humpbacks are also frequently threatened by ship strikes or entanglements in fishing gear near the coast.
it's important to realize that the whales that we do see out on the water these days are survivors of a major ecological disruption. And those survivors deserve great protection because more heat waves are coming.
And as those heat waves come, technology like Happy Whale helps researchers to track the surviving humpbacks faster and more thoroughly than ever before. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
And Juneau Animal Rescue is rehoming a bunch of tarantulas. They're among the pets taken from a home on police request, and the rescue organization had to get creative to find space for the animals and all their legs. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
The 16 tarantulas arrived about 3 weeks ago, along with a few other animals. Two bearded dragons, a ball python, four cats, and two dogs, according to Juneau Animal Control Officer Karen Wood. She says it's not often that Juneau Animal Rescue receives this many animals from one home.
But it's an animal control case where we took custody of the animals by request of the police. And when that happens, we hold animals for a 10-day safekeep period.
The safekeep period applies to arrests, hospitalizations, and other short-term emergencies, and can be longer depending on the situation. After 10 days, if the owners don't make a plan to retrieve an animal, they become property of the rescue. The organization treats any medical issues, spays or neuters, and microchips the animals, and then puts them up for adoption. The tarantulas could skip a few of those steps. The ball python and 14 spiders have already found new homes, and one is now a long-term resident of the rescue, living in a terrarium upstairs by the staff desks. She's dark, fuzzy, and about the size of a Thin Mint cookie.
This one's our office pet, so she'll get to be like this big, 6 to 7 inches.
Wood says finding places to put all the animals was challenging. Normally, they put smaller animals, like rabbits, where they can make space, often a hallway. But in that environment, one of the bearded dragons started turning black, which Wood says is a sign of stress. So they moved the spiders and the lizards into a room used for grooming dogs and brought in a space heater.
Just because we don't have a good space, a warm space, and a quiet space.
Now, the bearded dragon is back to its normal tan coloring. One tarantula and both dragons are still waiting for their forever homes. Juneau Animal Rescue has been struggling with capacity for years. The organization is looking to expand into a bigger space soon, with more room to house all the animals that need shelter.
We're pretty cramped. This building's been here a long, long time.
Wood says she hopes that one day there'll be plenty of space for tarantulas and dragons that need a place to stay on their way to a loving home. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And an update to this story, two more of the tarantulas have been adopted and only one remains. For more local news, tune in during All Things Considered at 4 p.m. and Morning Edition starting at 5:45 a.m. each weekday, or visit ktoo.org. KTOO's spring membership campaign continues today. You'll hear spots, and we are on air this week encouraging folks to make sure their renewal is up to date, or if you've never been a member, now is a great time to take that step and support all the content you count on and love from KTOO, including Juneau Afternoon. Join, renew, or make an additional gift today at ktoo.org. Coming up next, we'll chat with folks from the Sons of Norway and the Goldtown Theater about the film Hilma, part of the Nordic Film Festival. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Listening to community-supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. The Nordic Film Festival continues at the Goldtown Theater next week with the Swedish film Hilma on March 21st and 23rd. The festival is sponsored by the Sons of Norway and Friends of Scandinavia Svalbard Lodge of Juneau. And here to chat about all of this now are Cindy Spaniers and Brenda Knapp and Colette Costa, otherwise known as Costa!
Boston!
From the Goldtown Theater. Gunnith Chisha Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all here. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Great. How's it going for you?
It's going pretty good.
I'm IGing us right now.
You're Instagramming?
Yeah, we're going to be so IGing. Famous. It's cuckoo.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about you all were here. This festival is like a monthly thing. It's like a special featured film every month. There's going to be one more next month. We had you here last month. You told us a little bit about the Sons of Norway. But Brenda, can you fill us in a little bit on the organization?
Sure. Thank you, Boston. Well, Sons of Norway has existed for probably about 100 years. We've had a lodge here in Juneau since 1935. And I'll just throw in that four of my relatives are on the charter, and which I happen to have at my house. We're going to be doing something with that. But the purpose of Sons of Norway originally was for Norwegians to get together and, you know, speak their language together, share food, culture, arts and crafts, music, of course, music and dance. And as time has gone on, the purpose is really to preserve those things in the culture and to make sure younger generations of Norwegians and Scandinavians and the public at large, anyone who's a friend of Scandinavian culture, maybe through marriage, friendship, whatever, know what we have to offer and do. So we hold events periodically through the year, and the Nordic Film Festival is one of them. The next one coming up will be a Frokost breakfast in April 13th, and people will hear more about that, but everyone's welcome to come. So thank
you. Awesome. A breakfast.
Yeah. We do that every year. It's a Saturday during Folk Fest.
So. It has saved my life for many a folk fest, let me tell you.
It's one of those things where, yeah, you've been out late the night before and you need some brekkies.
Still awake and you're like, where can we get some food? Let's go to the lodge, you guys.
I love that. And Cindy, tell us a little bit about how this festival came about.
Well, part of celebrating our culture is, of course, looking at films. And that's another way of learning a little bit more about the languages spoken. And we are the Sons of Norway, but this is a way of celebrating all of Scandinavia. And to a certain extent, that brings us to our film this month. It also happens to be Women's History Month. This seems to be a good pick. Hilma of Klint is an artist I'd never heard of before this. She was born in 1862 in Sweden. She lived for 81 years, passing away in 1944. Her work wasn't really recognized when she was alive, but she produced more than 1,000 paintings. Today, she is known for possibly really starting and creating the abstract movement in art, you know, long before some of the other painters had begun that movement. In some of the research that I did, there was a video presentation of her larger works. Fascinating paintings with all different kinds of colors and shapes. You are really drawn into it. She's said to have been a very spiritual person, not necessarily in the traditional sense. The paintings show that spirituality, even just, you know, looking at these short film clips. So I'm excited to see the movie in full next week.
Wow, that's pretty great. And Costa, how is the Gold Town involved?
Oh, deeply. Very deeply. Well, we love to do community events. Community-based events are a big part of our raison d'etre, if you will. And we've been doing a collaboration for like 6 years now. I think even during COVID, we did some at the drive-in. Mm-hmm. And it's anything to kind of expand our film community and include other people within Juneau. And I think you guys approached me, or maybe I had a movie coming up and I was like, I really want to show this, but it's such a specific thing. And I'm not sure who reached out to whom, but, we just started that way and said, let's, put these two things together, and two great tastes taste great together. Kind of a Reese's peanut butter cup situation. And, thusly was born.
So it's been going for a number of years.
I think
then.
This is our sixth year.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And oh, that's so great.
Every year we really try to work Mads Mikkelsen into it.
And every year. Now we talked about Mads last month.
Given.
And how do you find the films? Do the Sons find them? Is Colette
Actually,
helpful in that?
You guys have suggested quite a few things that you've seen at festivals and whatnot.
Yeah, but you're very good, Colette, at getting them out and then having us watch them. And
I force them to watch
I think
clips.
Colette probably gets a lot of emails about movies that they want the art house to show, I would assume,
But some of it is a distributorship and what's made available, too.
True. We can't get everything, certainly. But, through the year, I just sort of collect titles and a lot of them, especially if they're from, the Nordic countries don't get a lot of attention here, honestly. So even a movie that is 6 or 8 months old that might even be streaming is something that's new to us because we never even heard of it. There was one movie we waited 2 years to get, that Amundsen film. So we can kind of get away with those things because it's still a big screen worthy movie that's just had no attention given to it.
We get some ideas also through our national organization, which has a lot of resources for the lodges and districts around the state. And in fact, we can even rent films through them. That's another resource if something's coming out that they're aware of.
I see. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about Hilma. I think Cindy was telling us a little bit about her in terms of her life. Let's talk about the film itself, because this is directed by, I think it's Lasse Hallström. And he might be best known for My Life as a Dog. That was a big one that sort of transferred over to the States and has been a filmmaker for a number of years.
Decades.
And it's interesting because there's kind of a family connection in this movie. Who wants to tell us a little bit about the family connection?
Don't mind if I do. So Lasse Hallström did, obviously, My Life as a Dog, huge movie. He also did slightly more accessible films like Chocolat and What's Eating Gilbert Grape? More people are probably familiar with that one. And he is married to Lena Olin, who's a wonderful actress. She was nominated for an Oscar for Lies. It's out of my head right now. Enemies, A Love Story, that one. Okay. But she was also in Unbearable Lightness of Being with DDL, who we love. Great
She's
actress.
Also on one of my favorite TV shows, Alias.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
In second season of Alias, she plays the mother.
That's right.
And it was a great arc on that show. So maybe people would know her from some of those TV or film appearances. Well, she's a fantastic actor.
And it's one of the, rare, very successful marriages in the world of entertainment. So she plays Hilma as an adult, but her real life daughter and the director's real life daughter plays Hilma as a younger woman. So it's mother and daughter playing the same character, which is wonderful because they look alike. So you don't have to suspend that much disbelief.
I like that. He's probably like, you know what? I have an idea, y'all. At dinner one night, he's like, guess what, y'all? that makes it pretty easy. And I'm sure they're all working wonderfully together.
I bet it was a gas.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with the Sons of Norway. We're talking about their Nordic Film Festival. It's Hilma, which is showing next Thursday, March 21st at 6:30 p.m. And again on Saturday, March 23rd at 4 p.m. at the Gold Town Nickelodeon, which is, of course, 171 Shattuck Way, right here in downtown Juno. And you can go to goldtownnick.com for more information. But I did want to talk a little bit more about Hilma herself, because I feel like there's something interesting. You sort of touched on it, Cindy, but that she was one of the first, she's now considered basically sort of a precursor, one of the first people to really get into the abstract movement. And you mentioned that she was very spiritual. And I think there's like some, she's known as a mystic maybe, right? And some of the work even has like visual representations of like spiritual ideas inside her work. And, and I'm just curious about like why is there a film about her? What was some of the events in her life that maybe were prompting a movie like this?
When she was young, her sister passed away, and I think that had a lasting impact on her and how she viewed life. When she went to art school, and she graduated with honors, but she wasn't always taken seriously as a woman artist. And I think that's why with Women's History Month, it's nice to focus on her. She eventually started collaborating with a number of women who helped each other. And there's a question on whether or not she had personal relationships with them. I don't know that anything is known for certain on that. The film delves into that a little bit. For whatever reason, her works were not shown. There's several cases where I think she tried to get paintings shown, and there were a few shows. But when she was looking at, you know, eventually she knew she was going to pass away, she mandated that her paintings not be shown for 20 years until after her death. Oh. It took a while for them to get out into the mainstream. I think it was in 1983, the Guggenheim showed a number of her works, and they had more than 500,000, some 600,000 visitors come to see that exhibit alone. It's the most of any of the showings at the Guggenheim. The spirituality comes in when she was working with this group of women. They would read Christian scripture, but then they would get into these other mystical things, including seances.
Yeah.
And she had said that a lot of her works of art are from the streams coming out of these visions, that she herself didn't necessarily plan things out, that they came from within, and there was a certain guidance in her hands.
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking that up because it was a fascinating thing to me. And she was the group you're mentioning, they called themselves the Five, right? And it was a circle of women inspired by theosophy, which is a word I'd never heard before, theosophy. And they shared the belief in the importance of trying to contact the so-called high masters, which is what you're talking about. And I guess it's interesting because you mentioned sort of the death of her sister and how that is probably, you know, how sometimes those childhood events become the driving force mm-hmm. of your life. And so I feel like the film is going to cover a wide range of all that kind of personal mm-hmm. story of hers and how that probably impacted her relationships throughout her life. I love that there's a young version and an older version where we get to right. see sort of, you know, a life gone by, which is really fascinating.
If I could add, I think from what I read, too, she didn't apparently leave letters, journals, diaries behind her. So trying to understand her relationship, she was never married. And as has been said, she was very close to a group of women. But whether the relationships were romantic or not, there's no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the things that will probably remain private.
Yeah.
But perhaps just to some extent revealed in her art. So.
Well, it's a fascinating story. It's going to be playing next week at the Gold Town Thursday, March 21st at 6:30 p.m. And again on Saturday, March 23rd at 4 p.m. as part of the Nordic Film Festival from the Sons of Norway. Now, I'm assuming that if you can't make those particular two showings, will it also be playing at other times, Colette?
That's all we've got scheduled.
Okay, this one is okay.
This is it.
Because it's not Mad starring in it, so.
There's no Mad. Even better, it's Lena.
Lena, that's right. I love Lena. She's great. And of course, all that's going to be happening at the Goldtown Nickelodeon at 171 Shattuck Way. You can go to goldtownnick.com and you can find out more information. And it sounds like an awesome adventure. And we'll see you maybe next month for a preview of the final film for the winter festival for the Sons of Norway and the Nordic Film Festival. So Cindy, Brenda, and Colette, thank you all so much for coming in today.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Sheesh.
Thank you.
Up next, aspiring and seasoned writers have the opportunity to gather in Skagway this May for the Northwoods Writers Symposium. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. KTOO turned 50 a few weeks back, and we are celebrating throughout the spring, and we want to hear from you, the community that has supported locally owned airwaves in Juneau for 5 decades. We'd love to hear your reflections on how KTOO has impacted you over the years. We're looking for audio submissions that are 1 to 3 minutes in length that share your thoughts, memories, driveway moments, personal stories about the station that we can use on the air. To submit, record your message on your smartphone and email it to JunoAfternoon@ktoo.org. Instructions for getting good audio can be found on our homepage at ktoo.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Salamat, thank you.
Hi, this is Christina Michelle, member of the Black Awareness Association of Juneau and host of Culture Rich Conversations. We've been partnering with KTOO for almost 4 years now to bring you perspectives from the Black lived experience. Whether we're discussing Black mermaids or Martin Luther King Jr.'s unique legacy in Alaska, we aim to bring Juneau together through greater cross-cultural understanding. When you join KTOO as a member, you make work like this possible. Give at ktoo.org.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Northwoods Writers Symposium is taking place May 29th through June 1st in Skagway, with panels and workshops covering a wide range of topics from narrative to travel writing. And you can find out more about that at nwriters.com. Here to share a preview are organizing faculty Katrina Wolford, joining me in studio, and via Zoom, we have Jeff Brady from Skagway. Gunath Chish, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in this, well, not in the studio, one in the studio, and Jeff on Zoom. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Gunath Chish.
Good. Gunath Chish to you. Wasa Iati Katrina.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. All right. So the Northwoods Writers Symposium. What is the Writers Symposium? Let's start there.
I'm new-ish to them. Kind of volunteered and then never left. Jeff has been there since the very beginning. So,
okay. Jeff, tell us a little bit about how it got started and what its main focus is.
Well, we got started with the great starter of all good things, Buckwheat Donahue, back 14 years ago. He and Daniel Henry from Haynes were kind of instrumental in getting an idea together. The Sitka conference had just kind of retired itself, and there was room in Southeast for another writing conference. So we jumped at it. I got on board as at the time I was a newspaper editor and still bookstore owner and a writer. I write poetry and fiction as well. So we got it going, and it was popular. We had city of Skagway support for getting it going, and it's been able to sustain itself over the last 14 years. And we bring in a named keynote writer every year, and then we add 5 or 6 Alaska writers, and then welcome everyone.
That's awesome. And I know, because that's the one thing that I saw was that it is available for both aspiring and, of course, seasoned writers. So if somebody is perhaps just getting started in kind of getting to their writing phase in life, this could be for them as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we tailor to that, we try and get emerging writers. We like to call them emerging because everybody's kind of in a state of trying to break out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people get published after Northwoods, and it's a wonderful thing. We mix a number of workshops with panel discussions on things that are important to us, especially Alaskans. This year, our opening panel is Narrative Bridges, Writing Across Cultures. And it'll be led by our keynote, Jamie Ford, who is a Chinese-American novelist, grew up in Seattle, and wrote a beautiful book called hotel on the corner of Bitter and Sweet, which was a bestseller. And his latest book, The Many Daughters of Afong Moy, won the Pacific Northwest Book Award. So we're really excited about having him. Katrina may be able to talk a little bit more about Jamie. She's met him a couple of times.
I've met him at a couple of different book shows. And one thing we really strive for in our faculty at Northwards, the teaching faculty, we're always looking for people that are very kind of easygoing and accessible to our participants. And Jamie really sort of fits that description. He's very easy to talk to. He is right along with the students. I guess we call them students, but and he's always giving advice. And he's someone that you don't have to worry about, you know, crowding his space. And I've met him several times, and I've heard from other writers' conferences about the good work that he does. And I'm personally very excited that he's our keynote this year.
That's fantastic. Well, you mentioned something interesting I wanted to bring up, because I introduced you both as organizing faculty, and you call the guests that come in, instead of guest speakers, you also call them faculty. So, and you have a different lineup of faculty sort of each year. And so I'm curious about that. Like, where did that sort of conceit come from, Jeff, in terms of using the word faculty? And I know Katrina just said the word student, so I'm curious about that.
Well, they come as teachers, and they sit on panels, which are basically kind of like lectures, but there's a lot of back and forth as well. And we just call ourselves an organizing faculty because we didn't know what else to call us. And most of us have some sort of writing background or bookish background. We have from Juno, Clonai, Lance Twitchell, who's on our faculty, and he brings a lot to us. Kent Fielding, who's the English teacher at Skagway High School, and but you know the best thing I think that people get out of Northwards is the one-on-one relationship with the teaching faculty and also the organizers. I mean, we're there too, but they have at least one or two half-hour one-on-one sessions with these authors where they can present, you know, what they've been working on and go back and forth with them on what, how they can improve it or where to find a publisher, things like that.
That's awesome. And I do want to mention that the website, I forgot the S on the end. So it's NW Writers, but then you add another S. So it's nwwritersS.com. And that will get you there. And of course, anybody can use Google these days. Just type in Northwards Writers Symposium or even Northward Writers, and it will basically show up on your search page so that you can get there. We're talking about the Northwards Writers Symposium with Katrina Wolford and Jeff Brady, who is joining us from Skagway via Zoom. And it's really interesting. So let's talk about the workshops themselves, the variety of workshops. Can you outline a couple different the workshops that will be happening at the symposium?
Sure. You want me to go, Jeff?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. A couple that we have this year. One is the Narrative Bridges that you said already, Boston, which is writing across cultures. And so the description that we put in our on our website is we're pondering preparation for writing about cultures beyond your own, including research beyond the page, and thoughts about being a story catcher without writing like a voyeur, you know, without using someone else's culture to propel your work. So I think that one will foster some really interesting discussion for our participants. Another one that we're doing this year is we often have something on process. We've got one on, let's see, we've got a healing, the healing power of stories. And that one is, it's a combination, it's like a panel and a workshop, and it's talking about starting with the place where you need to heal and how, what follows that in your writing, you know, like talking about you create your narrative doesn't create you, that kind of thing. And so that will be both a writing workshop and kind of an art piece workshop which will be really interesting. It's kind of a new thing for us this year.
I see.
Yeah.
I see one that is interesting to me, which is first, final, foremost, where to start, where to end, and what's important, because that's always for some people who may be, as Jeff said, the word emerging, right? If you're mm-hmm. just getting started or you're trying to figure it out and you're like, well, I know how it ends, but I have no idea like how to start, or you start something, you have a great idea, but then you get stuck in the middle and you'd be like, I don't know where this goes. How do I finish this story? So that seems like a really good workshop too. And then the other one that I want to hear about a little bit is this one that's called Small Town Tales, Trivial or Universal. What is that one about?
Well, if you've ever lived in a small town, I think it's basically navigating the gossip, and then and then also getting at the truth of things that may or may not have happened, or how you imagine they should have happened, or just make up something on your own. I was a newspaper man for years, and I was, you know, just the facts, you know, kind of writer doing that. But as a fiction writer, I sometimes go, you know, I might take an event that happened in history, but do it from a totally different point of view. The facts that happened, but the characters that you have to build around something that happened, there's a trick to it. In terms of trivial or universal, that's a tough one. Hopefully it's good enough to be universal, you know, after you're done with it.
Especially after you change the names of all your local townspeople that you don't want to know the story is about them. So, I mean, there's a variety of workshops. It takes place over a couple different days, and you know, that's going to be sounds really wonderful. And I know we are talking about these workshops, and these are going to be being taught by the faculty that we were mentioning. And you mentioned the keynote speaker, but I also see on this list Melinda Moustakas, who had a book out last year, and Homestead. She's an Alaskan writer and lives here in Alaska. And who else is on this panel of awesome faculty that you're going to be bringing to Skagway? Who wants to take that one?
Jeff.
She, okay. Katrina says Jeff.
I keep waiting for her to lead me. Sure. We're really excited about having Lily Tozroylik, who wrote a beautiful novel called Savolik Ancestor last year. And then Daryl Farmer, who is the lead writing professor from UAF. He has written a nonfiction book called Bicycling Beyond the Divide. You mentioned Melinda. John Messick is a teacher at the Kenai campus of University of Alaska. And he has a wonderful new memoir called Compass Lines. And then a couple of people who have come before and actually are pretty well known in Alaska, Christine Bile. She wrote a beautiful memoir called Dirt Work about working with men in the National Park Service trails, and now has a new novel called Lookout set in Montana. But she lives in Healy. And last but not least, Don Reardon, who actually was just in Juneau as a mentor for Poetry Out Loud. He had a poetry book last year, Without a Paddle, which was a very good book. And but he's best known for his novel The Raven's Gift, which was a bestseller about a decade ago, and he's got a new one coming out here in the next year.
Wow. And so I know there's going to be, you know, obviously a lot of classes, a lot of things going on, but you're also going to be in Skagway. And so I hear you're going to have like a big old barbecue, and there's going to be some other sort of outdoor events. I mean, it is May, early June, so that's hopefully going to be beautiful. So tell us a little bit about the stuff that's happening outside of the actual classes.
Yeah, I'll go. So this year, I think we're having a train ride and a trail rite. and you, the train drops you off, you do a little hike and you stop and you write together as a group, which is very cool. The barbecue that you mentioned is out at Jeff's place out in Dai, which is a homestead property. And he has set up this place called Alderworks, which he probably won't talk about today, but it's an artist and writer's residency. And we have music and we have great food. And it's a great time for everyone, faculty and participants, to come together. And we've got, you know, we do our consultations kind of in town and, you know, in nooks and crannies in Skagway. And Skagway is really interesting. The history is very interesting. And we also have participant and faculty readings, which are actually quite wonderful. And it's really exciting to hear what the participants are working on.
Yeah, it sounds like a really great time to sort of focus in for, you know, 2 or 3 days, really sort of make that, you know, your journey for those couple of days and learn and share and all that good stuff. And now the interesting thing about it is, of course, there's only 40 slots. There's only 40 people. So it's something that if you're interested in it, you got to figure it out. And it is, of course, it isn't free. There is a charge. We have to pay these teachers, and it's like going to school. It's like an intensive couple of days, right?
Yeah.
A couple of days. So I think it's $425 for the conference. Of course, then you have to, and there's also travel. And what's great is your website is really good at sort of explaining where you can potentially stay and how to get all the different ways to get there. And of course, that's the nwritersS.com website. And so is there, I guess my question is, I know there's a scholarship that you do, which is something for students, which I think the deadline for that has already passed. So somebody could be thinking about that for next year. But is there other ways of financial assistance or other things that can help people out? Do we have any options that way?
Not really, except up here in Skagway, our local arts council does offer 2 3-quarter cost scholarships. So for people in Skagway, 2 of them can apply for, you know, 3/4 of the price.
I see.
And then we just started working with the University of Alaska on a scholarship, and we've had a few applicants, and we'll be making that decision here in the next week or so as to who that person is. If we if we get enough applicants in the future, we might go for 2, but we'll see. Right now, we'll probably just have 1 this year. We sort of had 1 last year with Shailene from UAS. She was able to come in place of someone who had given her the her seat, and it worked wonderfully. And I think we want to keep trying that. But mostly, it's adults who come and they get a lot out of it. And we've had a number of people from Juneau and all over Southeast come to Northwoods every year. If you are in Skagway on the Thursday night of the conference, the faculty reading is free. That is something that we do every year. And you can come here, Jamie Ford and all the others read that evening at the Eagles Hall in Skagway.
That's great. It's the Northwoods Writers Symposium. It's happening in Skagway, May 29th through June 1st. You can get more information at nwritersS.com. Add an extra S on there, or Google Northwoods Writers Symposium. And if you have questions about your registration, please email Jeff at northwoodsinfo@gmail.com. Jeff Brady, Katrina Wolford, thanks so much for coming into the studio and joining us on Zoom, Jeff, to tell us about this awesome writers conference. If you're an aspiring or emerging or seasoned writer, it is the place to be at the end of May. So Gwyneth Cheese for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Up next, Juno Flotilla, the Coast Guard Auxiliary, is starting a class this Monday on boating skills. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's a little Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Wooford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On the seafloor beneath Alaska's cold ocean waters dwell some of the world's most diverse and abundant sponge communities. Sponges evoke shallow tropical waters, but they are abundant in Alaska's marine ecosystems. Deep sea sponges can thrive in waters that are cold, acidic, and low in oxygen, conditions common in waters off Alaska. Deep water sponges are slow growing and long lived, and some are hundreds of years old. These living structures create habitat for other animals, including rockfish, spot prawns, and golden king crab, providing protection from predators, feeding opportunities, and nursery grounds for commercially valuable fish species. Sponges are vulnerable to disturbances from commercial fishing, construction, and oil exploration. They are also affected by climate change and ocean acidification. Scientists have identified 52 species of sponges in the Gulf of Alaska and more than 125 in the Aleutian Islands. In fact, the Aleutians have some of the densest and most diverse coral and sponge communities in the world. There are likely hundreds of species yet to be described. Researchers continue to learn about sponge and coral distribution in Alaska waters and are creating a reference library of Alaska sponges. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
We've been raising programming funds the last 6 weeks through the mail and email for our spring member drive. Everyone who renewed or made an additional gift deserves a huge thanks. But if you still have a letter from us sitting on your counter that you've been meaning to get to, we encourage you to take care of your renewal. And if you've never given, what a great time to sign on. Just go to ktoo.org. Every contribution that comes in goes right back into the programs you listen to every day. Gnashchish.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Monday through May 6th, Juno Flotilla, part of Team Coast Guard, is offering its boating skills and seamanship course. It's mostly done via Zoom, but will also include 3 hands-on sessions. It's a way to get a head start towards a future career as a safe recreational mariner, or initial preparation toward a future career as a professional mariner. And here to give us all of the details is Stu Robard. It's going to the cheese. Ha-i-gu-di. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa-i-a-ti, Stu.
Likewise. I don't speak Tlingit, but yes, indeed.
Absolutely. When somebody says wasa-i-a-ti, all you got to do is say yake.
Yake.
That means I'm doing good. It's good. It's all good. Well. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Juno Flotilla and Team Coast Guard.
Actually, we have part of our Coast Guard Auxiliary in District 17 of the Coast Guard. We have 10 flotillas, and we're all arrayed around the north edge of the Gulf of Alaska from Kodiak to Ketchikan, and we just happen to be number, I guess, 3 from the end. We're in Juneau, we got another one in Sitka, another one in Ketchikan.
So and the auxiliary, what does that mean in terms of your work in the Coast Guard?
We're volunteers.
Okay.
The Coast Guard takes a good look at us and wants to see what's in your background so that you're wearing the uniform. Here we are.
Yeah, you're in uniform. I see you right here.
Who's wearing our uniform? What their background is? Is there anything that falls out of the closet that we need to know about? And prior service military I did my part with the Alaska Army National Guard. Took the course just for shucks and grins here about 13 years ago and had a couple of members come up, and both of them at the same time went, "You need to be a member of the Coast Guard Auxiliary." And I went, "The what?"
Yeah, right? And here you are.
Here I am.
That's awesome. Okay, so you offer many classes, but here starting on Monday is this skills and seamanship course. So tell us a little bit about what
boating
this course
skills
is.
Skills and seamanship encompasses a basic recreational boating safety class, but it has a lot more elements to it. For example, navigation using charts. We get back to the basics with plotting tools and that sort of thing. We're going to talk about engines and knots and radio communications. Happen to be carrying a small portable here, right here.
I see that.
I'm going to tell you all about how that works. It's fantastic. It's become a little bit more affordable. It's not cheap, but it still has a very huge skills or various properties that it'll do for me. And it's very portable, working in small boats. So it's something that everybody should know. The course itself is for not just people who have boats or own boats. It's for somebody who just wants to know a little bit more about and is willing to delve in and work with us for 7 weeks, Mondays and Wednesdays, and learn a lot more and perhaps make some intelligent choices at the end of that as to if they still just want to ride along with others or if they want to venture out and get their own boat.
Yeah, I'm talking to Stu Robards, who's teaching part of this course, which is Boating Skills and Seamanship. It's Mondays and Wednesdays. It starts on Monday, March 18th, and it goes through May 6th. And it's from 6:30 to 8:45 mm-hmm. each of those days. And it's taught online via Zoom, although you will have a couple of classes in person at the Yacht Club, right?
It's one thing to watch somebody tie the knots, but we really want you to all tie the knots with us.
You're going to test us.
And we can talk to you and we can show you how to use charts and plotting tools. We want you to be able to use those. Yes, you can use electronics, but what happens when the electronics dies?
I see.
So, okay. We're back to the basics, and you know how what your that beautiful piece of navigational instrumentation will do for you and what you can do and what the capabilities are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what's fascinating is that these courses are taught by the auxiliary all over the country.
Yes,
and indeed. I know that one of the things that is advertised about this course is it's been taught to more than 3.5 million boaters, mm-hmm. which is a big course. So it's the flotillas themselves are part of the auxiliary, and that is a part of the larger entire national sort of Coast Guard and all of the volunteers. And there's a whole bunch of different classes. If you go on the website, you can sort of
see
like the different things that are offered. So in addition to this class, are there other classes that the Juno Flotilla offers?
We do, as demand warrants. There's one if you still are reticent about taking the wheel and taking over the helm, as it were, steering on a boat. You want to still, but be aboard. And should something happen to that principal person that is in command, if you will, what would you do?
How
would you step into the fray and do the right sorts of things? Maybe if you needed to do a medevac or something like that. Talking on a radio.
I know, and the radios, they have gotten much smaller. Those little transistors have gotten a lot smaller.
This is only 6 power. Usually the ones on your boat are 25.
A little bit more, yeah.
Exactly.
There is a small cost for the course.
Do.
It's $60 or $90 for a couple. Mm-hmm. And I do want to mention that you can reach out to Stu at 907-321-9275. Or stuartrobards7@gmail.com. And of course, I also know that you can find Juno Flotilla on Facebook. If you have a Facebook, you can follow
Correct.
Juno Flotilla at facebook.com/Juno Flotilla. And that's FLOTILLA.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, Stu, if you have, could you give me one or two, I'm just looking at the flyer here and I see rules of the nautical road. Can you give me one of the rules, maybe two?
One of them is to have an effective lookout.
Okay.
A proper lookout. One is to watch your speed.
Yeah, you can't speed.
One of the things that we, the challenges that we issue in class when we start that particular chapter is the Titanic.
Oh.
What happened? What was there anything that the Titanic did incorrectly that had something to do with the rules of the nautical road? And it actually broke 2 or 3. I won't tell you. You have to come to the class.
Come to the course. And there's all kinds of stuff covered in here. Which boat is for you, equipment for your boat, trailering your boat,
mm-hmm.
All that good stuff. Lines and knots, which Stu was mentioning before. They're going to teach
yes.
you how to tie some knots. My grandfather, I was never a good student.
The useful knots.
Yes, the useful
not
ones.
Not knots just for knots' sake, but
the ones that are good.
Pardon the pun.
My grandfather was more of an airplane guy, but I remember always mm-hmm. trying to learn the knots to tie down the float plane. And
there's some specific ones.
There's definitely
for float
ones.
Planes,
yeah.
You betcha.
Yeah, that's so,
that
so good.
So you can get them undone without causing a gnarly mess.
I love that. And so I really want to thank you, Stu, for coming in. I want to give all the details here once again. It's the Boating Skills and Seamanship course. It's taught by the Juno Flotilla, which is part of the Coast Guard Auxiliary. It's starting Monday. So if you're interested, reach out to Stu.
Please do.
At ASAP. Stuart Robards. Yeah. StuartRobards7@gmail.com, or you can give him a call at 321-9275. And I guess
here's the textbook.
I see that text. That is full of good information.
You'll go through all of it, and you'll be a master of most of it.
Yeah, I love that. And it does cost $60 a person or $90 for a couple. Mm-hmm. It's all done by Zoom. It's Mondays and Wednesdays from 6:30 to 8:45. And for more information, do you have to sign up in advance? Do we need to give you a call?
We want you to, so that I'm going to bring you this textbook. Plus, I have some supplemental that some of that has better graphics in it.
I see.
But I want to underscore the fact that you don't have to own a boat to take this course.
Okay.
If you're interested in boats, you ride along with boats. That includes the Alaska ferries. And the scope of this course is everything from a stand-up paddleboard to a 20-meter yacht and everything in between.
Awesome. Thank you for coming in, Stu. You can find out more about cgaux.org, and you can find all the information about boating classes there, or give Stuart a call at 321-9275.
Thank you, Boston.
Gunnath Cheesh, for coming in today. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO is on the air right now, raising the funds needed to pay for the programs you rely on each day. We encourage you not to hold off in supporting the service that's an essential part of your life. As an added thank you, anyone who contributes $15 a month or more will be gifted a special New York Times digital subscription. Renew, add to, or start your membership at ktoo.org.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Reminder that this is KTO's Spring Membership Drive. Your support is vital to the work we do, and Juno Afternoon is possible because of your membership. Join, renew, or make an additional gift now by visiting ktoo.org and smashing the donate banner. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno weekend.